Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey everybody, this is Greg Gutfeld. This is The One. Happy New Year. Getting over the flu. Last couple of weeks have been hell, but I am excited about my next guest. He's a comedian and an author and a political satirist. He's perhaps best known, though, for creating a Twitter persona, or is it persona? Persona. That has basically trolled the woke media. It's a creation from his mind that is based on every woke person you've ever met. The woke person's name, and I hope I get it right, is Titania McGrath. I don't know if you've seen that name on Twitter, but some of the most inventive and hilarious tweets you'll ever see have come out of this fake person's mouth and has tricked a lot of people in the media. The person behind that, comedian Andrew Doyle. How are you, Andrew?
I'm pretty good, thank you. I'm pretty good.
Excellent. So did you create this character? First of all, I want to ask you who the character is, and then I'm just wondering if you actually thought it was going to take off like it did.
Well, the character is pretty much, as you've described, a very kind of woke, female woke activist who's constantly looking to be offended about absolutely everything else. And she trawls online to try and find any tweet or anything that she can say is in some way an example of discrimination or racism or sexism or homophobia. And I think what you said about how lots of people in the media have fallen for her or have assumed that she's real is because there's so many people like that out there. Like, she's just this identifiable figure. We all know exactly who I'm talking about.
Right.
And I think that's probably why it took off. To be honest, I didn't expect it to or anticipate that. I just did it for my own sake because everything was pretty much driving me insane.
Yes.
the constant woke madness, and it's the only thing. And because, of course, you know, the kind of woke activists, you can't reason with them. You can't sit and talk to them because they're in this sort of cult.
Yeah.
They're in sort of cultish mindset. And so all that's really left to do is to laugh and try and undermine their power that way. That's the only thing I could think of to do.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was at the launch of the Huffington Post. I think it was like 2003, 2004. And was one of their first bloggers. I was living in London, editing Maxim UK, and so I was writing for them. And when I read it, just I guess it brings back PTSD when I read your column, because I feel like she is the perfect Huffington Post columnist that you created.
Oh yeah,
I'm wondering, did anybody reach out to her as a fan, like legitimately, like embarrassingly, like I think you're the greatest person. Were there people in the press that were interested in meeting you, this person?
Yeah, I had actually, it was an American talk show host. I can't remember who it was now. An American talk show host who contacted her saying, "I think your tweet's really interesting. Can you come and talk to me about this on the show?" I wish I could remember who that was now. Oh. And she replied saying, "Yes, but I have some conditions." I think some of the conditions were that she would not interact with any males, any men whatsoever, and that she would have some time to do some of her progressive slam poetry on the show or something like that. But what was great, to be fair, was when this host realized that it was a spoof, she started playing along with it as well.
I
thought that was really great, actually. That was really good.
You, well, I'm not going to say you because I just gave away the whole story. A column was an op-ed was published in The Independent. Can you explain what this was? And it was basically talking about how harmful comedians were. You'll explain it better to me. And then if you can just tell us what happened at the end and what the actual article was.
Well, The Independent newspaper is a major newspaper here in the UK, but they've gone very, very woke of late. And that's The Independent for you. Mm-hmm. And they've got a bit of a habit. They're a bit like The Guardian, like that. They've got a bit of a habit of writing articles to attack comedians and attack the kind of jokes that comedians say. So I thought, you know, it'd be quite interesting if Titania submitted a piece and to see if they would publish it and to see if they would publish from someone they didn't know.
Right.
You know, just someone, as long as it was woke enough, as long as it had the right message. So Basically, an article was written, let's put it that way, by someone called Liam Evans, who was an unknown, he'd never published anything before, nothing, no presence on the internet.
Yeah.
And his argument was that comedians should be subject to hate speech laws and investigated by the police mm-hmm. if they cross the line, if they say offensive things. Mm-hmm. And The Independent published it without doing any background checks or anything, just because they agreed with the message. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it's still online. If you take the fourth letter of every sentence in that article, it spells out the phrase, Titania McGrath wrote this, you gullible hacks. And the thing is, they didn't, they just went with it. Yes. They just went with it. And I think, and of course, the target there was the woke media. The yeah. fact that they will publish something by, it doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter how ludicrous it is or how authoritarian
right.
it is in tone. In fact, that's even better for them. They'll just publish because they support the message and they want the message out there. And what's interesting is that article, although that was an obvious hoax, I mean, that's another thing. They shouldn't have published it because I think it was completely obvious,
right.
obviously made up. But having said that, there have been articles on The Independent and The Guardian since then, which are even more extreme, mm-hmm. which are not made up. So, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, you know, I also believe that the reason why the media falls for this or runs stuff like this, it's a virtue signal that protects themselves because right. they, you know, they'll like a person that is a pig, let's say just an actual like, you know, philandering yeah. pig can cover his tracks with enough virtue signaling, hoping that, oh, like, you know, for the next couple of years, they'll leave him alone if they're sufficiently woke. I mean, you look at Harvey Weinstein, you know, he ticked all the feminist boxes, you know, right. under the assumption that that would create some kind of shield. And I do think the media sees a lot of this stuff as a way to keep the mob away from them.
Well, it's, sure. I mean, know? the number of times you see very, very vocal male feminists and they turn out to be these predatory yes. monsters.
Exactly.
What makes me very suspicious when some male is sort of going on about intersectionality all the time. I think, okay.
Yeah.
But although, you know, obviously that doesn't mean anything. But even if you haven't done anything, even if you haven't done anything wrong, the woke tribe will get you in the end. They'll
yep.
find some way to attack you and bring you down. I mean, I get called all sorts of names, horrible sort of ghastly, accused of all sorts of ideas that I just don't believe in. Things
yep.
that I've never thought or said, you know, and it's because they don't know what you do. And it's because they don't care about the truth.
Right.
They don't care about the truth. They care about this fantasy world that they've created for themselves, in which every other person is a fascist and anyone who's a conservative is an evil Nazi and all this sort of just rubbish. And I don't know why. I mean, maybe it's what you say about virtue signaling. If you're fighting the demons that are out there, then you look like the hero. You look like yeah. the knight in shining yeah. armor. Maybe that's what it's all about. Maybe it's genuinely well-intentioned. Maybe a lot of people have really, really bought into this myth that we live in this horrendous neo-Nazi world. You know, so I don't know, but it's dangerous. It's very backward thinking, and it's very divisive. You know, this kind of emphasis on, you know, what your skin color is, what your sexuality is, what gender you are, above all things. I mean, this is like it's unpicking what the civil rights movement was all about, which is that we're all the same, we're all equal.
Yeah,
you know, that's why I think it's worth taking down, because I think it takes us backwards to a very dark place.
Yeah, what scares me is, we've all been familiar with this stuff. I was, you know, it wasn't called identity politics before, but there was always a hard left contingent in academia. My fear as I've gotten older is that it's left academia, and social media has been a great amplifier of it, but it's now in human resources. It's yeah. it's the toxin has escaped the lab and it's out there.
Yeah.
And I think because, so you make this point in one of the articles that you wrote too. This is, you're talking about a small minority of people that are wielding a disproportionate amount of power, and so when they're moving to companies, the companies just cower, and they think, you know, if they just have another 5K cancer run or something like that, they're going to be safe. You know, they don't know how to deal with this stuff.
No, because it's scary, because you lose your livelihood. It's yeah. all very well for me. Like, I'm really privileged because, you know, I'm a writer and a comic. I say whatever I want and I don't have a boss.
Yeah.
Right. So I can do whatever I want. But if you're not, I mean, if I was still a teacher, if I was still working in the call center that I was doing, I couldn't make the jokes I make. I couldn't write the things I write because someone would call me up and say, oh, no, that this isn't an issue. This threatens, you know, the whatever diversity policy or whatever it is, you know. So, and this does affect everyone, and people are just sick of it. They're sick of treading on eggshells. They're sick of worried about making jokes and being misinterpreted. And it's like you say, it sort of incubated back in academia, mm-hmm. and just as it was becoming unfashionable in the academic
right.
world, it sort of somehow migrated
into the
real world. The human resources, like you say, governmental quangos that sort of decide what things we can hear, and you know, this kind of stuff. So it's, you know, I really always emphasize this. It's not the majority. The majority are on our side about this when it comes to the culture war, and it's not about left and right either.
Yeah.
That's why I've got so many friends on the left and the right, mm-hmm. Who are all sick of this idea. It's basically a conflict between who believes in liberty and who believes in handing over authority to these very sort of curious and power hungry people.
Yeah, you know, I think about some of the more recent victims. One of them I had on my podcast who wrote Jesus Christ, I can't think of his name. He's I knew him too. He was a bald fella. He wrote a book, How to Lose Friends and Alienate People.
You're talking about Toby Young.
Yeah, Toby Young. So he was a guy that was, he lost a charity that he's founded. He lost a charity that he founded, his job. So, and that was, and I mean, he was one of the, and then you had that, who's that elderly philosopher who was a,
Roger Scruton.
I mean, it is just amazing that these people just get etched out. And
what it is in those cases, I think, I mean, like in the case of Toby Young, it was similar to the Kevin Hart case that you had in America, the actors that withdraw from the Oscars. It was tweets that he'd sent a number of years ago that were obviously jokey tweets, but were offensive to some people. Right. And this is the tactic, is what they'll do is they'll try and find something you've ever said. And you know, as though people don't make mistakes, as though people don't misspeak, you know, they because they don't believe you can ever come back from a mistake, which
but
is
your,
an awful.
Your point. Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm just saying that with Toby Young and with Roger Scruton, the real reason they were attacked is because they're conservative, because they're right wing.
Yeah, that's
That's really
true.
What it was about. So they'll find absolutely anything. I mean, in the case of Roger Scruton, the guy from it was a publication called The New Statesman in this country, not only misquoted what he said, actually reversed the meaning of what he said.
Yep.
So he ended up looking like a racist. And actually what he was saying was an anti-racist point. Now, that's pretty low. And it also means that the journalist must have known what he was doing. Right? But they don't care about the truth. He was just thinking, I'm taking down a right winger. I'm taking down a conservative. This is low stuff.
Yeah. I remember, too, the editor, I believe, had his comeuppance, right? The guy from the New Statesman ended up – he got caught out. I think did he lose his job, or was he just suspended or –
He was demoted.
Right.
He was demoted. I mean, if lying about someone you're interviewing and utterly misrepresenting them in order to have them fired isn't worthy of losing your job, I don't know what
exactly.
is.
Exactly. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And the only reason it got caught out is because Douglas Murray, who's a journalist here, really pursued it and made sure that we got access to the original recordings of that interview so that we could determine what Roger Scruton had actually said.
You know, go ahead, sorry.
It's just so unbelievable that there's no moral compass there. You know, I mean, it's all very well. Why can't we just disagree politically without resorting to these really underhand ad hominem tactics and trying to destroy each other? I think it's absolutely disgusting. You know,
it is probably one of the worst cultural trends in like modern history. Yeah. And it is designed because the question that you're asking is what they're not interested in, which is the idea of dialogue and conversation and community. Right. What they've found is what they believe is a solution to eliminate that because if I think you're wrong, we can have a debate. But if I think you're evil, we can't debate.
Sure.
So now just by saying you're evil, I eliminate the whole idea of debate. I had Douglas Murray on this show, like, I don't know, a couple of months ago. And we talked about another real area of concern, attacks on science and especially the idea of gender. And it's like this is some really scary stuff because it is directly counter to common sense. But if you point it out, if you say, actually, I disagree, I don't think men and women are an artificial construct. How did this become dangerous? And what you're talking again about is a tiny, tiny, tiny minority who have an outsized impact through intimidation and fear.
Exactly. I mean, I've spoken about gender and sexuality in the past and biological sex, and I've been called a horrendous transphobe for pointing out that we are a binary species and there are such things as men and women, you know?
Yeah.
This shouldn't be a controversial thing.
I mean,
if you don't have the biological reality of male and female, then there is no such thing as trans. Trans doesn't exist.
Exactly.
You know? So, you know, this is not – it's also, I should point out, is not the thing that the vast majority of trans people want.
Right.
You know, this – this is completely it's undermining a lot of the work that a lot most trans people are doing, and it's making people think that trans people are these sort of angry people, and then they're not. They just want to get on with their lives.
Yeah, it's this tiny
minority of lobbyists and activists and angry people on Twitter who are just smearing everyone else by association.
Yeah, do you know what it is? It has nothing to do with straight, gay, lesbian, trans. It's the second part. It's the activist mentality or sensibility that is doing it. I saw a survey of trans, and they are more conservative than the general population. It's like if you look at what they believe in. And so what you're hearing out of, let's say, 100 trans, there's one person. And generally that one person, there is something that has nothing to do with gender, but there's a psychological issue going on that you also see in other hardcore social justice activists, a certain kind of a mixture of bitterness, hate, and envy, and something about their own life that makes them unhappy. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
What has happened, modern contemporary leftism has pushed the sensible liberal out of that world. They're almost without an island. I mean, they're a man without an island.
It's because they've bought into the idea of you're not with us, you're against us, which is the thing that Bush said during the Iraq War, of course. If you're not with us, you're against us. It's a horrible kind of tribal idea. No room for nuance there whatsoever. I mean, even like you say, last time I was on Fox News, I had people saying to me, well, now you're like them.
You're,
and it's like, well, no, I'm not going to play this game. I'm not going to do this. I believe that everyone should be talking to each other more. I think that's the problem that we've got at the moment, is that people on the left and right aren't talking because of this guilt by association nonsense. Mm-hmm. And I think people need to be brave enough not to do that, just to bypass that. It's because in the culture war, right and left don't actually mean anything anymore because people don't know what it means anymore.
Exactly. And I think maybe that's progress, but it's scary to me. This is like I miss the days of right versus left, because this is more pernicious, because it's kind of undermining what it's like to be a human being. It's undermining our freedom of expression. So I'm going to ask you as an exit question, is this getting worse before it gets better? Will it get better? How do you combat the woke? If the woke decides to target a friend of yours or targets you, Claire Lehman used the phrase "share the risk," and I think it sounds easier than it is. But do you have any advice for that? Like, how does one share the risk? How does one get these creeps away from you or away from your friends?
I think it's firstly, you do have to stand up for your friends when people attack, because. Mm-hmm. By doing so, of course, what you're doing is you're opening yourself up to a similar kind of attack. And that's scary. And that's why people won't do it. Mm-hmm. But you have to do that. You just have to, because that's the morally right thing to do. Mm-hmm. The other thing, though, I think, is to stand up for people who aren't your friends,
right,
who are being wronged. Stand up for people who you don't agree with who
exactly
are being wronged. When someone is, whenever I stand up for someone's right to freedom of expression, even if I hate what they've said, right? Mm-hmm. And this happens to me a lot. I get told that I'm endorsing what they're saying or supporting what they're saying. I'm not. I fundamentally oppose what they're saying, but I want them to be able to say it, because we've got to have the same rules for everyone. We've got to have freedom of speech for everyone. And I think so the way to combat this is to try and get beyond this partisan tribal nonsense, to not say, oh, well, I'm on the left, therefore I can't talk to someone on the right, or I'm on the right and therefore I can't talk to someone on the left. You've got to just ignore all of that stuff and talk to each other as human beings and be adult enough to disagree without just throwing insults and calling each other fascists or whatever like that. But whether it's going to get better I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, mm-hmm. because the trouble is, and we had it recently with the general election in the UK, of course, Boris Johnson, loads of woke activists decided that Boris Johnson and the Conservative Party were fascists and racists, and therefore, if you vote for them, you are a fascist and racist, right? And the country's full of it. Yeah. So now that they got in and they won, they say, that's proved us right. The whole country's full of racists.
Right.
So they decided on the premise, and then they took the outcome to prove their own premise, mm-hmm. right? And you have the same thing in America with Donald Trump. So the woke will say, anyone who votes for Donald Trump is a fascist and a racist, and America is full of fascists and racists. Then he wins, and they say, look, we were right all along. So they end up – so in other words, they take it as proof of their own false premise, and they double down.
Yeah.
So every time this thing happens, every time this – and I'm sure Trump will win again this year. And every time this happens, they take that as further proof mm-hmm. that they are right all along, and they need to keep – going down their authoritarian route to make these things better. So that's why the spiral will never end. They'll keep descending.
Yeah.
And at some point, that's why it will get worse, I think. But at some point, it's going to implode, because there's going to be like a tipping point where people are like, do you know what? I can't keep going along with this.
Yes.
That has to be, because otherwise we'll just live in this collective asylum forever and ever. It can't work.
Yeah, it's especially identity politics. You watch it, is that it's that crocodile that eats you last. It's like there's nobody, like, sooner in the grievance Olympics, everybody turns on each other, because sure. I have to be the most oppressed. And then it's like, okay, well, no, I am, because the intersectionality is the piling up of identities. And at a certain point, it's like there's just too many identities. There are more identities than people, and they're miserable. And I also do think, like, sooner or later, you got to get a job, and you can't you can't work with people. Like, this kind of behavior is antithetical to a humming workplace. Like, you can't have a coworker like this unless, like, though I, you know, that's interesting, because in England, you know, I lived in England. You guys have the best sitcoms. Peep Show was getting close to this. There has to be a sitcom that creates that kind of character, so people can, like, that Titania has to be a character that's on a show.
That's one of the reasons I wanted to make the character as well, is I wanted people to be able to laugh at this type of person, so that this person becomes a figure of fun, because these powerful people hate being laughed at.
Yeah,
right? They absolutely hate it. That's why tyrants throughout history have locked up satirists, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one way to do it, is to just try and bring them down a peg or two, and make people realize that it's okay to laugh at these people. But the problem you have, really, is that a lot of the people in charge of TV and TV commissioners are themselves really woke.
Exactly.
Right? And that whole industry is really part of the problem. It's actually part of the thing I'm mocking, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, the evidence of that in America was the Justice Smollett. Nobody could question that hoax, because you were not woke. If you questioned that hoax, you were not sufficiently woke.
Right, but that's one of the examples of where it does go too far and turns on itself, because there comes a point where even people who wouldn't be his natural supporters have to turn around and say, "Oh, actually, come on." You know, so that's the sort of hope, is that when things get really out of control, then people are gonna stand up and say, "No, actually, we've got to put a stop to this and get normality and sanity back."
Well, here's my suggestion, Andrew. I would definitely write a treatment with her as a character, and get those guys. I know Jess Armstrong is no longer, like, he's too big now, but I just feel like it's a Peep Show type show with and she is like the central character. It would be amazing. But where can the people find you, Andrew?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, AndrewDoyle_com. Mm-hmm. Titania's at Titania McGrath. I've got a website, andrewdoyle.co.uk. Come and follow me. Do the usual social media stuff.
Excellent. Well, thank you, sir. Have a lovely rest of your evening.
I will. Oh, and I should say as well, if you're interested in Titania, she has got a book. She's got a book called Woke, A Guide to Social Justice.
Excellent.
Which is like her sort of takedown of society in about 18 chapters. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that came out about 6 months ago, right?
It is, and I'm writing another one now.
Fantastic.
She's writing a book aimed at children.
Oh, even better. Greta.
I don't know if you've seen all these woke children's books that are coming out.
Yes. So, how dare you? You cannot criticize them. How dare you attack a child?
Yeah.
That's exactly. Awesome. I can't wait. And you can get that book on Amazon everywhere. I remember when it came out. It was hilarious. Yeah. So good luck. Congratulations on that.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Take care.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.